Bibles to the book of Genesis chapter 39, the book of Genesis chapter 39. We're going to read the entire chapter. The text will be from verse 7, or maybe the last phrase of verse 6 as well, the last sentence of verse 6 to the end of the chapter. Genesis chapter 39, 6b to the end of the chapter. We'll read the entire chapter. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him out of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down hither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said unto his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not or knoweth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within, and she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, "See, he that is Potiphar, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out." And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, "The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out." And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, "After this manner did thy servant to me," that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. When we come to this chapter, beloved, and read it in its entirety, one thing should stand out to us, and that's the similarity of the opening paragraphs and the closing paragraphs. Just as we saw in the first six verses last week, that God was with Joseph in Potiphar's house, where he was sold as a slave, and where God blessed him so that everything he touched and put his hand to prospered, and where everything was committed to his charge so that he became the foreman and the manager of everything in Potiphar's estate. So, when Joseph comes to prison, bound in iron, as Psalm 105 tells us, The Lord blessed him. The Lord was with him and blessed everything that his hand touched, so that Joseph became in charge of all the prisoners even that were in the prison there with him. That's very important that we see that beginning and that ending, because it tells us something about this entire chapter. That this is the theme, this is the line of thought in this chapter, that God was with Joseph. And that means two things. First of all, that in whatever circumstance Joseph finds himself in this chapter, God is with him. God is his strength. God is the one who causes him to prosper in Potiphar's house. God is the one who gives him strength against temptation. And God is the one who, again, causes him to do well and to be favored in prison, because God is with him. But it tells us something else, too, about the presence and the power of God. And it's this, that God led Joseph by his sovereign providence into every circumstance that he experiences in this chapter. God brought him to Egypt. God brought him to Potiphar's house. God caused him in Potiphar's house to be exalted. God brought him into temptation in Potiphar's house. And God, through Joseph's faithfulness, led Joseph to prison. God did this. And that's very important for us to see. We talked a little while ago, or we read a little while ago, about the providence of God. And that's going to be, as we've seen, one of the main themes through the whole story of Joseph, so that at the end of his life, Joseph, looking back on what his brothers said, says to them, or what his brothers did, says to them, "Ye meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, to save much people alive." And that's the theme here in this chapter, God's providence over the evil circumstances and the evil people who come into Joseph's life to harm him. God is sovereign. That's a beautiful thing for us to see as we go in to this chapter. We're going to see today that the wife of Potiphar, Joseph's master, attempts to seduce him. And when Joseph refuses, she lies about him, and the result is that Joseph is cast into prison. Let's look at that under the theme, Joseph resists a powerful temptation. Notice three things. First, a real temptation. Second, a remarkable resistance. And then a promising outcome. The temptation that Joseph had to endure here was real, and it was powerful. For a number of years now, Joseph has been working for Potiphar, and as he matures, probably now in his mid-20s, he comes to the attention of Potiphar's wife. Verse 7 tells us that she cast her eyes upon Joseph. That is, she looked at him with longing eyes. She coveted him. And she said to him, "Lie with me." In the Hebrew, it's just two words in the form of a command. "Now," is her idea. In her husband's absence, she assumes the position of authority, and she uses that authority, in Joseph's case, to command him into a physical relationship with herself. What an abuse of power. Now, I said God, in his providence, led Joseph into this temptation. What occasioned this temptation, according to the end of verse 6, is that Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. That is, Joseph was handsome in appearance and Joseph was pleasant in personality. Those two things, his good looks and his pleasant personality, were a gift from God to Joseph. The same language is used to describe his mother, Rachel, to whom Jacob, when he meets her, is immediately attracted. And now, because of these gifts that God has given to Joseph, not because of something that Joseph has done, Joseph is led into this tempting situation. God, in his providence, brought him here. Now, there's something for us to see here. Oftentimes when we are tempted, and I'm thinking here especially of sexual temptation, physical temptation, oftentimes it's because we will open ourselves up to this temptation. We put ourselves in tempting situations. Maybe it's flirtatious behavior or inappropriate language or things that we watch or things that we laugh at, or if we're young and unmarried, we're alone with our date. Here, Joseph does not put himself in a tempting situation. God, in his providence, leads Joseph into this situation. This was a real and this was a strong temptation for Joseph. Like any normal young man, Joseph was created with hormones and physical desires. And Potiphar's wife, we can surely believe, was a fair, good-looking woman. Potiphar was one of the rich and the famous in Egypt. He moved in elite circles, and the wife that he had on his arm was sure to be attractive. This was not an old lady attempting to seduce Joseph. And then notice how persistent she is. This made the temptation of Joseph strong and powerful. Not only is she bold, telling Joseph exactly what she wants from him, but she doesn't give up. Day after day, she tries to wear him down. She made this proposal to him. Verse 10 tells us, day after day. And her idea is this, Joseph, my husband is gone. No one is around. Nobody will know. And surely the temptation in Joseph's thinking was to reason this way. Here I am, all alone, with little opportunities for physical relationship as a young man, little opportunities for love and understanding, far away from family and friends. Nobody will know. This is the temptation that Joseph faces, and she's readily available to him. Now, how similar that is to sexual temptation in our age or any age. But I mention our age. It's all around us, constantly making its offers to us, readily available. Something that can be done in secret. Nobody has to know about it. In the privacy of your home, on the internet, all by yourself. And everyone is told, this will make you happy. It's something that you deserve. It's up to you. It's your choice. Don't let others put restraints upon you. And it's just as brazen as this woman trying to seduce Joseph. You go into the workplace. You go to college. And you soon find these things out. There's no holding back on suggestive behavior and comments, especially if you, like Joseph, are attractive. Now understand, behind it, behind this woman, and behind all sexual temptation is Satan working hard to wear down the spiritual sensitivity of the people of God. He'll work on our eyes and our ears. He'll work on our thoughts and desires. He'll work on our relationships to make us dissatisfied. He'll work through the media. He'll work through books. He'll work through literature. And he won't give up. He's persistent day after day. This is the predominant temptation in our society today. Now you ask, why? Why? The reason is this, that Satan understands that if he can destroy the sexual morals of a society, he has destroyed the family. And if he destroys the family, he has destroyed the church. Just look here at Joseph's own family. In Canaan, this was a sin that they were falling into, and it was threatening their separate existence as the people of God. Jacob, four wives. And then Judah, out looking for a relationship with a prostitute. And these people are losing their distinctiveness. This is why God must bring them to Egypt. This is Satan, the seed of the serpent, threatening the seed and attacking the seed of the woman. In response to this real and this powerful temptation, Joseph says no. He resists the temptation. He refuses Potiphar's wife. Now, you look at it and you say, how did he do it? We have here in Joseph both an example of how he did it, and we see where Joseph found the strength to overcome and to resist temptation. Notice several things in what Joseph did. First, Joseph refused immediately the temptation as it was presented to him. He refused. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 27, we're exhorted not to give place to the devil. Joseph gave no room to Satan. He gave no room for this woman to get her foot in the door to tempt him. He didn't listen to the counsel of the ungodly, Psalm 1. He realized that there's a road to sin, and he stopped it at the very beginning. No. Second, Joseph made no excuse for sinning. Notice here, what others would use as an excuse for this very sin, nobody will know. Joseph used as an excuse or a reason not to sin. He says to Potiphar's wife, "My master doesn't know what's with me in the house." Others would say, "Well, you can get away with it then. Here's an opportunity." Joseph said, "No, I cannot betray his trust." It was a reason not to sin. He doesn't make excuses. Third, Joseph verbalizes his refusal to sin. And in that, he takes a stand. He commits himself to a position against this sin. He doesn't say to Potiphar's wife, "Well, I'll think about it. Come back tomorrow, maybe another time." He doesn't say to her, "I'm not attracted to you," or "You're too old of a woman." No, he flat out says, "No!" And he explains why to her. He verbalizes it, and in that he makes a confession, a commitment to remain chaste. And then fourth, Joseph makes an appeal to conscience, to what's right and wrong, to his own conscience and to the conscience of this woman. He says to her, "My master has kept back nothing from me but you, because you are his wife. You don't belong to me. You belong to him. You're his wife." And so he states it morally, appealing to conscience, his and hers. And then fifth, notice that Joseph calls this act by its proper name. Today it's softened. It's called an affair, something that sounds remotely desirable and fun. Mysterious. Joseph calls it sin and wickedness. In verse 9, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin?" This is the way he sees it. That's not the way she sees it. It's not the way our culture sees it. Just so long as two adults consent with one another, well, it's up to them, isn't it? You're entitled to it if you want it. Joseph says, "This great wickedness and sin." And then sixth, Joseph was on guard. Joseph prepared himself. He took precautions against this temptation. Verse 10 tells us that when she daily enticed him, he not only refused to listen to her, but he refused to be with her. He wouldn't be with her. He avoided her. He does everything in his power to keep this temptation at bay. When she comes in the front door of the house, Joseph is out the back door of the house. He's not going to be with her. He refuses. Jesus says we should watch and pray so that we don't enter into temptation. This is what Joseph is doing. He doesn't trust himself. He doesn't say, "Well, I'm strong enough. I can handle it." No, he avoids even the tempting situations, the opportunities to sin. And then notice, seventh, that he refuses her not just once, but repeatedly. She comes to him day after day, and he day after day affirms his no, his refusal. She won't, and he won't let her wear him down. No was his answer constantly. He didn't waver. And she soon figures that out too. She's not going to get him by trying to entice him, so she will have to force him. Satan must know that our answer to sin is no. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. But then notice in the eighth place that with regard to this particular temptation, Joseph flees. When she finally ambushes him in the house and he's on his own and she grabs him by the coat and makes the demand again, lie with me, he runs. He doesn't stay to talk. He leaves his coat in her hands. That's freedom. That's bravery. This woman is the one who's a slave, a bondage to sinful desire. Joseph is free. He fled in his freedom. He got him out of there as quickly as he could, as far away as he could. In the New Testament, talking about this very sin, Paul says, flee fornication. And he alludes even to what Joseph did here in that word, flee fornication. Other sins we may grapple with, but this one requires a unique response. There's such a power to it. It's like a baited hook. It looks good. It looks better the closer you get. But as Proverbs tells us, the end thereof is death. You meddle with it, and a dart strikes through your heart. Joseph resisted. Now, how remarkable that he did this. Many strong men have been slain by her, Proverbs 7, verse 26 says. How true, some whom we thought were strong have fallen prey to this sin, the most spiritual, the most godly. Think of a David. Think of all the beautiful things that this godly, spiritual man wrote. He fell prey to this sin with Bathsheba. How remarkable. How remarkable when you look at Joseph and his background and his family. You say, look at the home he came from. Look at how freely his dad played with this and with women. Look at the consequences in his older brothers and the example that he has in them. Reuben going to one of his father's concubines. Judah seeking out a prostitute who turns out to be his daughter-in-law. If anyone could use this as an excuse, Joseph could, but he's faithful. Where did he get his strength? What's the secret? It's the theme of this chapter. The Lord was with him. This is Joseph's strength. Joseph was faithful to God because God was faithful to him, and God was with him. God not only led Joseph into this temptation by his sovereign hand, but God was with Joseph to provide him a way of escape. Joseph not only experienced the power of the temptation here, but he experienced the greater power of the grace of God, which was with him to give him strength in the midst of this temptation. God was faithful to him, and God was with him. There's great encouragement for us here. It may be that you're brought up in a home of bad examples, and you want to use that as an excuse. Or you say, well, that weakened me, weakened my resistance. It created desires in me by what I was exposed to. Or maybe you deal with the guilt of this sin from your past and you're sometimes overwhelmed with it. Here's what we learn. God is able. God is able to provide a way of escape. God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all we can ask or think. God is able to keep us from falling. God will be with us. And God's grace, God's forgiveness is greater. He is washed and made clean from all the guilt of sin through the blood of his Son. These are things that Joseph realized. And realizing them, despite his background, despite how powerful this temptation was, despite the weakness of his own flesh, Joseph depended on God. And he lived before the face of God. If you look at this chapter and the way that Joseph answers this woman who attempts to seduce him, this is the main argument of Joseph against this temptress. This is his strongest tool of resistance. He says in verse 9, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Because God was more real to Joseph, even though he's far away in Egypt, God was more real to Joseph than anything else in his life and experience. Conscious of the fact that he lived before God, Joseph says, "How can I who have been loved, I who have been redeemed, I who have been saved, I who am a child of God, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" He didn't say, "Well, there are reasons that I shouldn't do this. I might contract a disease." He didn't say, "There may be an unwanted pregnancy and responsibilities and consequences and shame." He didn't say, "This might bring the wrath of Potiphar on me if he finds out and I'll lose my position." No, Joseph said, "How can I do this against my God?" This was his main line of argument. That's the secret to his strength. Joseph had a love and a burning passion and a constant consciousness of God that superseded everything else in his life. You go back a few chapters and Jacob is going to work for 7 years for his wife Rachel. And the Bible tells us that he loved her so much that they were to him, those 7 years, just like a few days. Joseph has a passion that reigns, something like Jacob's love for Rachel. Joseph has a passion that reigns in his heart, and it's his love for God. His consciousness of God, his understanding of what God has done for him and to him in his life. And so he says, "I cannot do this and sin against God." In Psalm 16, verse 8, the psalmist says, "I've set the Lord always before me because he is at my right hand. I shall not be moved." When I'm tempted, I shall not be moved because God is with me, because I live before him, because I've set him before me. May this be our constant confession and resolve and strength to live before God and then remember who we are and what God has done for us. In Romans 6, verse 2, Paul asks this question, "How shall we that are dead to sin live any longer therein?" He's understanding what's happened through his salvation. This was in Joseph's thinking. "I may be a slave in Potiphar's house, but I'm not a slave to sin. I'm dead to sin." He reasons like Paul in that same chapter, Romans 6, verse 11, "Likewise, reckon yourselves also to be dead indeed to sin, but alive unto God through Jesus Christ our Lord." Think of it that way. Reason that way. Reckon that way. Account yourself that way. Paul says, dead to sin, alive to God. And then let not sin reign in your mortal body, that ye should obey it in the lusts thereof. You're not a slave to sin. You've been set free. Don't be a slave to sin. Neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those who are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. Last week we saw Joseph doing this in Potiphar's house as a slave. He lived before God. Now when he's faced with temptation, it's the same thing. He's going to live before God and to God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And so remembering who he was, and remembering that he lived before God, Joseph refused, and Joseph resisted temptation. What was the outcome? It was a very promising outcome. You say, really? Yes, this was the outcome. Look at verse 21. But the Lord was with him. This was the outcome. Oh, for Joseph in his own life and experience, the circumstances were horrible. Joseph was lied about. Joseph was made to look like the bad guy. Joseph was slandered. He was racially profiled, this Hebrew. She ganged up on him. She calls all the men of the house when Potiphar's away so that they all have a story against this Hebrew when Potiphar comes home. He's unjustly treated. He loses his position and job. How many of you have lost your job unjustly and felt the injustice? He was imprisoned. He was bound in metal stocks and chains. Everything in his life seemed to fall apart. He lost grip on it all because he was faithful in temptation. And you know, when in temptation we're faithful to our God, we can expect to be treated that way by the world, by those who don't know God. A young person who won't join in wild partying is going to be shunned. A man on the job who won't laugh at or contribute to crude humor is going to be viewed as old-fashioned. A woman who will dress herself only in modesty can expect to be viewed as old-fashioned. And that's how the church is going to be treated in the world too, for its stand on this commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. The church that's faithful to what God says about human sexuality, what God says about marriage, that this gift is reserved for marriage, that marriage is between a man and a woman, that marriage is for life, that church is going to be shunned and mocked because the world says it doesn't matter. As long as two people consent. It doesn't matter if they're already married. It doesn't matter if they're not married. It doesn't matter if they're both male or if they're both female. It doesn't matter if it's just for one night, recreational. It's up to you. You have fun. Don't let anyone put restraints on you. And if you take a stand, you'll be persecuted. Faithfulness costs something. It did for Joseph. But God, the Lord, the covenant God, was with Joseph and showed him mercy. That's steadfast, faithful covenant love. Showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper, and so on. Somehow Joseph's life is spared, even for this crime. Most would be executed. Joseph ends up in a prison for the elite, the king's prison. In prison, Joseph is blessed with a clear conscience. While Potiphar is angry, while his wife is guilty, Joseph is free. He doesn't have to second guess what he's done. He lives in a clear conscience before God, and God is with him in his relationship too with the jailer. Somehow, from the bondage of chains and shackles, the godliness and the trustworthiness of Joseph shine through, and the keeper of the prison sets him free and entrusts him with everything in the prison, the prisoners also. Joseph is exalted again, even in prison. Now, don't you see a pattern here in Joseph's life? Humiliation and exaltation. Humiliation again and exaltation. And so often that's the way God works with his people. He brings us very low to lift us again and to prepare us in some way for what he has down the road for us. Moses spent 40 years in the wilderness before God called him to lead his people out. David was anointed to be king, but then hunted and chased for years before he was exalted to the throne. Christ was betrayed and forsaken, and crucified, and beaten, and rejected. Humiliation with the purpose of exaltation. Understand, this is God's pattern so often in our lives too. It may be that because of your faithfulness to God, you're persecuted, you're mocked, you're shunned, you're humbled. There are consequences. And you don't know why. Joseph didn't know why. How could he? How could he know why? But God had a greater purpose, not just for Joseph to exalt him, but even beyond Joseph, by his hand of providence for his people. God would make these things work out for the salvation of his church. This is church history. Because Joseph was faithful, he was cast into prison. Because Joseph was cast into prison, he interpreted the dream of the cupbearer. Because he interpreted the dream of the cupbearer, he also interpreted the dream of Pharaoh. Because he interpreted the dream of Pharaoh, he became the prime minister in Egypt. Because he became the prime minister in Egypt, the Egyptians were saved from starvation in a famine. Because the Egyptians were saved from starvation and had food, Joseph's own family also were spared and saved from starvation and were brought down into Egypt for their good as the people of God. Because Joseph's family was saved in Egypt, the messianic line of Christ was preserved. Because the messianic line of Christ was preserved, Jesus the Savior could be born, all because Joseph, by God's grace, was faithful in temptation. It hurt. There was pain. There were consequences. But God was with him. And so we don't complain. We don't argue against the providences of God in our life. We don't mope and whine when people bring evil against us, but we trust that God has a purpose, a sovereign purpose. That's what we learn from this story and its outcome. This is God, the sovereign, working from a distance, mysteriously, with his hidden hand in the life of Joseph, keeping him faithful in little things for the glory of his own name, for the salvation of his church, for the furtherance of the gospel, for God's great purpose in history in the coming of Jesus Christ. God promises, as he was with Joseph, to be also with us. Amen.